listeners, it's me, Marnetta Larimer, host here at Impacting the Classroom. As always, we'd like to kick off our conversation by asking, what's impacting the classroom? Well, today, we have with us Chris Myers to chat with us about Virginia Department of Education and their implementation of class. Welcome, Chris.
Glad to be here. Hi, Marnetta.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your work at the VDOE, which is what I'll call Virginia Department of Education throughout the rest of the podcast.
Sure. So I'm the Director of Quality Measurement and Improvement, and I lead our Unified Virginia Quality Birth to Five system, which is a mouthful. So we call it here VQB5, that stands for Virginia Quality Birth to Five system. It's basically our quality rating improvement system, but we intentionally call it a quality measurement and improvement system because we do frequent measurements and we use that measurement for a lot more than just a rating system.
Nice. Thank you. It's summertime, finally.
Yes, right? It is.
I know you were in the K2.
I initially, the first kind of half of my career in the elementary school, I started as a kindergarten teacher, actually 30 something years ago, which I frequently go back to thinking about sort of those first 20 minutes when I could already sort of tell which children were walking in the door socially ready to learn and other ones that were not, and just how that sort of impacted their trajectory after that. So then I was a second grade teacher, a reading specialist for third through fifth grade, coached teachers out in Colorado for a while, and then had my own children and kind of in a roundabout way came back to Virginia and got connected with some of the early childhood organizations here. And that's just when it really kind of all came together, right? Like, we have to do something in these first 5 years so that more children are walking in that door ready for kindergarten.
Wow. I was going to ask you a fun question, but I have to pump on these wonderful things, these nuggets that you gave me already, right? So you talked about that as an educator, those first 20 minutes, right? And that we're making these assessments on how we're going to support these children individually to be successful in the classroom, you know, and your journey with all of that. That brings me to my first question. Like, what was your first impression of class?
So I remember it well. That was probably now 15 years ago, right after the pre-K tool came out. And I had moved back to Virginia and was looking for some part-time work. I was actually hired as one of the mentors for our initial quality rating system back then. It was a voluntary system. And so they had us go to some training and we had this overview of this new tool called class. And I just instantly thought, that's the key, right? Like, I had been coaching K-5 teachers for several years, doing professional development training for teachers. You know, I felt like I understood good teaching, but I didn't always know exactly how to label it and how to point out to teachers what they were specifically doing well and kind of specifically where they could improve. And so when I saw that pre-K tool, it reminded me a lot of what I used to coach kindergarten, first and second grade teachers on as well. And just getting down to kind of those really individual interactions to say, you're really strong at positive climate, I'm not seeing a lot of concept development. So let's work on that. So it really just clicked for me. And that kind of became the focus of the reason I stayed with the quality rating system and moved kind of from the local level to the state level work that I'm at now.
Yeah, your story kind of parallels mine, right? Like when you were talking about those first 20 minutes, I'm probably going to reference that a couple of times through here. You know, and you're thinking about, you know, meeting children where they are, that aligns with, you know, the behaviors that class looks at, right? And so when I learned about class, it was like this aha moment for me going, oh my goodness, okay, so I'm not crazy. This is important, right? I'm doing the right thing, you know, and really supporting children in the way that really moves the needle in a positive direction. So,
yeah, and it's much more than about skills, right? Because that's how, when I started teaching, I think it was about, I thought I had to teach the alphabet and the numbers, and I did. But what I love about class is it's much more about how you're teaching it and how you're encouraging that language and that thinking and just your routines. And when I think back to, like, to kindergarten teacher, you know, I don't remember all the skills I necessarily taught children, but I do remember a lot more about like trying to encourage them to talk and have conversations and think. That's the part of class that just really gets me excited. And when you all introduced the infant and the toddler version, it just was fascinating to me to then even think about my own baby and watching some of those early skills and kind of understanding what class was talking about, but in a way that makes sense with like 6-month-old babies and what we're already doing with them to encourage that brain development.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, that's yeah, again, aligned, very similar path there. So you circled back to Virginia, right? And so where did class fit in with the QRIS system? And like, how did you guys determine that this was the thing that Virginia was going to do?
Sure. So I wasn't involved when they first decided where to include and how to do the points. But in our very first QRIS that I was hired to be a mentor in, there were six different aspects of quality that we measured. And so class and interactions was one of those, but it was also environment and ratios and kindergarten transition practices and things like that. At that time, though, the state of Virginia did decide that out of all the points that were earned, that the interactions points would count for the highest number of points. However, what we saw was because there were so many other ways for programs to get points, that we found that what programs tended to do between their two-year rating renewal was they kind of got points doing a lot of the easier quick fixes, like adding more books to their shelves or maybe slightly reducing their ratio, which some programs have the luxury of doing and others don't have the luxury of doing, or they go to more conferences and get more PD points. And so we just didn't see what we wanted to be the focus of our quality system, the interactions, was happening. So we did a big revision, and I was involved in some of that work, kind of giving my voice at the local level to the state leaders that now I get to hear from the local voices about that we needed to put more of an emphasis on class. So in our second version, that was still a voluntary version, we did try to emphasize that to get to those higher levels, you had to have sort of minimum levels and certain benchmark levels of interaction quality.
I love that. I love hearing about that. I think this has to be like one of my favorite series across the podcast, is just hearing everybody's journey, implementation of our tools. Can you tell us a little bit more about your state's quality early childhood system and the values that guide it?
Sure. So we are now in this phase where a couple years ago, again, because of all the work that was happening around looking at school readiness, looking at, you know, our voluntary quality rating and improvement system that it grew in participation, but never really grew to more than probably 20-25% of all our programs. And then just looking at some needs, you know, like all states were doing. And so a state law was passed in Virginia back in 2020. And that state law did a couple of really important things. One, it unified all of the childcare early childhood systems work in the state under one roof. So we used to have the child care licensing division and some of the quality improvement work at Department of Social Services, and then other state-funded pre-K programs at the Department of Ed. So we unified all of that. So now the Department of Education oversees licensing, subsidy, our quality system, and that's really allowed us to have more of a unified vision. The second thing the state law did was it established an early childhood advisory committee, because again, at the department, the focus was primarily K-12. And so this new committee represents all the different aspects of the field here in Virginia, and they advise the Board of Education on matters related to early childhood. So that's the second important piece. And then the third was the establishment of the required participation of publicly funded programs in our quality measurement and improvement system. So we now, after a couple years of practice, we are in full implementation, and every single early childhood program that accepts any type of state, local, or federal public funds is required to participate in our system now. And then programs that don't have public dollars can still opt in to participate as well. So yeah, so we've grown hugely. We are now over 3,000 sites that are participating, 10,000 classrooms, and we get down to every classroom to give them that feedback about their interactions that we need to.
Yeah, Louisiana did a similar thing with Act 3 in 2012. So that we went through when we made it a mandate in our state as well. So I guess my next question would be around observations, right? Like, we're learning about class, you know, we're helping teachers to identify what those behaviors are and putting them into practice. So obviously we're going to have to observe to see how that's going, right? Mm-hmm. So how are class observations implemented? You all decide on this approach?
So in Virginia, right away, we realized that we needed to do this down to the classroom level, and we needed to do class observations in every classroom, not just in a random selection of classrooms. And we didn't want to do it every 3 years. What we found from our other system is if we waited multiple years, people didn't really use the feedback in an ongoing way for professional development. And if we only did it in some classrooms, then some teachers got the benefit of getting that feedback, but not other classrooms. And it also didn't help us understand the experiences that all children were having. So through some different pilots, we had some different preschool development grants, we really saw the impact of getting to every classroom. So that we knew we wanted to do that. We also knew we wanted to have frequent opportunities for feedback, and that that feedback would probably be most beneficial if it was someone who was familiar with the program, who actually was local, understood the culture, the context, and could support those teachers really more on an ongoing basis. So we used a lot of what was learned in Louisiana and established the primary source is these local class observations that are typically done by local leaders. Like it could be the site director, the principal, or other kind of regional local staff or contractors who again know more about the context and can kind of stay in touch with those programs. So our Ready Regions are 9 different regional lead agencies around the state. They cover every corner of our state. We at the department fund them to coordinate and conduct these local class observations and to help ensure that they're being done appropriately, to support observers with strengthening their skills. But those happen now, these local observations, in every single classroom twice a year. So they get an observation in the fall, and then they get an observation in the spring so that they can measure growth, see the impact as well. And then probably, as folks can imagine, if we only relied on local observations, you know, we need kind of a quality assurance check, and the Board of Education wants us to have that. So we do have a third party, what we call external observation system, where we do some random selection, where we have external observers who kind of have more rigorous training standards, and they go in and observe, and we have a comparison process where we look to see if the scores are consistent, or if they're inconsistent, we might replace some certain domain scores that are not consistent. And that's helping strengthen the overall system too, and it gives us kind of that quality assurance check.
Most definitely, and supports, like you said, the observers and the educators feel like understood, right, in their practice, you know, because if you're doing those quality checks, then it's not happening to them or a consequence, right? Like it is actual data that is collected, and they can believe that what's been seen and observed is true and accurate.
Yeah. And it's sometimes we've also heard from folks that it's good to have that outside view, right? Like, although like we really love when site leaders do their own observations because they're the ones who truly know their teachers. They know what their teachers have been working on or struggling with, and they can put it into context. But at the same time, when you know somebody really well, sometimes it's hard to have an objective view. Yeah. And so we have found that some people will also really find it beneficial. They may not completely agree on their scores, and that's fine. We're not looking for 100% agreement, but that it's helpful to sometimes have that outside viewpoint as well.
Most definitely. Bias is tricky because it can be a positive, but it also be a negative, mm-hmm. right? So I can be an educator. They don't even like me. That's why my scores look like that, you know? So
Definitely.
Always ground us in what's true in those classrooms. So
yeah.
You see a lot of fluctuation between the scores?
No. So actually, this is our first year of doing a full sort of score comparison. We did see overall in our practice years, local scores did tend to be higher, which is probably to be expected, again, when you kind of know and are familiar with sites. But what we did this year is we compare scores that are done in the same windows, in the same classrooms, local and external. And a little over half of the time, there was one domain that was replaced. So, but not the whole score. So in general, we end up keeping more of the local scores, the domains. And if we do replace them, probably not hugely surprising, it tends to be in the instructional support domain. That's the one that's most frequently kind of out of whack a little bit. But that's kind of a sign for all of us as a system to kind of revisit instructional support and engage support for learning and the toddler tool. Just kind of really make sure we're all really clear on what that is and how are we all viewing that in our classrooms.
Yeah, great opportunities for some PD. And we're going to circle in. I have a question for that, but I'm trying to put everything together.
Yeah, and actually, can I add one more thing there? With the consistency, what was so interesting is that the emotional support domains and even like relational climate in the infant, in some of those dimensions, they were tremendously consistent. Like it's pretty fascinating that someone who knows sites really well and is there all the time and an outside person comes in, those scores, in fact, our teacher sensitivity scores were almost like identical between the local and the external. So again, it's kind of just showing us different trends, like where as a field are we more consistent? And where as a field, again, could we get stronger at kind of overall understanding?
Yeah, I love that you added that. And we know that that social emotional piece, that, right? That's the basis of learning. So those things are consistent across observers is amazing. Definitely the right direction we want to be going in. Mm-hmm. When you say we, who's responsible for collecting the data, the class data in Virginia?
Yes. So that's a complex system. So we have what's called, we call it our LinkB5 data portal. And so it's a portal that each year, all the sites register in this portal and they fill out site profiles, educator profiles, and classroom profiles. The local class scores get entered in that LinkB5 data portal. So the Ready Regions might help them, but the observers themselves can enter the scores. And so all of those 10,000 observations in the fall and another 10,000 in the spring, those are all housed in our LinkB5 data portal. So we, at the Department of Ed, we have access to those. We run reports. We send reports back out to the field. Sites can export their own data reports once those scores are in and verified. And then we just conduct kind of ongoing analysis. The external scores are captured by our external vendor, our Virginia TeachStone external team, and they house those scores. And again, we have a data sharing agreement set up so that we kind of every 2 weeks get those scores as well. The sites for their external scores, they get emailed back a feedback report 10 days after their external observation, and that has their scores on it. So that's how the sites get back their external scores as well. So then we house all those two files together, merge them together, and we have a separate data team at the department who we call our data whizzes, and they kind of help us along with our LinkB5 team to do all the comparisons and analysis. And so our job actually starting next week, because our observation window ends on May 31st, this summer, we will be compiling all those results, cross-checking them, doing a lot of data verification to come up with the overall quality ratings.
Okay. 10,000 classrooms. Who's coordinating? Like, how are you planning those? Right? Like,
yeah. It's a lot, right? Because back when we used to do this at the local level, I thought it was a lot when we had 30 classrooms to do. So this is primarily what we fund the Ready Regions and what they're responsible for. So again, the 10,000 classrooms are broken into the 9 regions. And they're similar in size, but obviously some of our regions that are more populated have more sites and more classrooms. But they are funded by classroom level or by the number of publicly funded classrooms in their region. And so, again, their job is to help make sure that there are enough local observers to cover all those classrooms. And then they kind of help monitor to make sure that they're happening. Again, they can hire some contractors to help do that. Really, what they are mostly doing is trying to build that local observer capacity because, again, to really get to that scale, we need to have some local leaders who are doing this themselves and that are responsible for getting those scores entered at their own sites and for their own programs.
Absolutely. We kind of started talking about this before, right? About the data and like informed professional development, right? Mm-hmm. I want to kind of talk about that and talk about what decisions are influenced by your class data. And then I'd love a specific example that we share with our listeners.
Sure. So in general, when we get back our class scores, we, like probably everyone does, we look at sort of the ranges of low, mid, and high range scores. We also use a total class average score here in Virginia that's similar to what they used in Louisiana, where instead of having benchmarks by the domains, we average all the dimensions together. And we take that total class score and we say if it's a 3.99 or lower, we prioritize those classrooms for our state-funded coaching supports. And if it's a 4.0 or higher, we try to encourage the use of other types of PD supports. So we gather different types of resources. There's webinars, there's trainings that some of our partners do, or that we just compile different resources for. We have about 4 or 5 different state-funded coaching partners who, again, then take that list of any classroom that's getting a 3.99 or lower, and they provide the outreach to say, these coaching services are offered to you, and we encourage you to take advantage of them. They're not required to do that unless their overall site gets a need support rating, which is our very lowest in our point system. those sites are actually required to work with a DOE quality consultant and a state coaching partner. But the other classrooms are offered the coaching services. And again, the idea is it might be with our infant toddler network, if they're an infant toddler or a family child care provider. If they're a special ed classroom, it might be with our training and technical assistance centers. So we try to sort of match up who can support them based on their needs as well.
Wonderful. So we've been doing class for a while, right? In Virginia. Can you share with us some of your stories around impact? Like, what have you seen happening since you've implemented class?
Gosh, it's so fascinating because some of the things that I saw early on when I was saying when I first was a mentor and learned about class and sort of those aha moments that people were having about, oh my gosh, you can do concept development with young children and you can have back and forth conversations with them. You can talk to babies. I love when you, like, we would hear stories about infant teachers who were like, I didn't know I was supposed to talk to them, you know? And so kind of to see those changes happening. But again, it was such a small scale that what we're really starting to see now is those same things, but it's such a larger scale. And so, you know, everyone is kind of talking about class now, and people have different thoughts and different opinions, and people are at different stages of learning about it. But we're all talking now about interactions and what do interactions mean, and how do we now explain that to families? Because we're about to start having our first public quality ratings. And so it's just really exciting when I see leaders who are really bought into it. We were talking the other day with a site leader. She's an assistant principal, and she had some questions about her scores. So we met with her and we were talking about it. But she was saying, you know, I think every principal or every assistant principal should be doing their own observations because it'll really help them understand what young children, what's appropriate for them, what's developmentally appropriate, and how kind of intricate it is. It's not just play. So when we start to see site leaders that are really buying into it and seeing the value of it, encouraging their teachers, that's, I think, what's been most exciting for me to kind of see and the involvement of that over the year.
I love that. So earlier on, you were talking about people doing the easy things, right? When we were talking about like, Would you say that classrooms are now moving away from focusing on the easy things and are more focused on the things that matter?
So it's interesting. We do have a small curriculum component to our quality system as well. But one of the things what we're trying to help folks understand is that the way you use your curriculum or the way you might want to support the materials in your classroom depend on your class scores. So we're not going to say everybody has to do the same thing in their classroom and use the same curriculum or have the same types of this number of books on the shelf. Let's look first at the interaction scores. Let's look first at which domains you're strong or need support in. And then let's think about, is there something in the environment that could support that? Is there something in the curriculum that could support that? So we do still talk about environment, curriculum, sometimes even ratio, because obviously, you know, ratio alone doesn't certainly guarantee good interactions, but it sometimes can help if the ratios are too high. So those things come up, but they tend to come up when we say, let's first look if there's a need with those class scores, and then let's delve deeper and kind of better understand what those needs are and if there's something else that's impacting that.
So my next question might be a loaded one. I'll try to, how do I say this? So you said you're going to start having your first public ratings.
Yes.
So for someone who's not in education, like the families that are out there, you know, or just the communities, you know, we're existing in, why should they be excited about this? Not just these public ratings, but also your implementation of class.
That's a great question. And I love this part of the work because it feels like we've been building up to this with all our practice years. You know, I think that this is a chance for us to shout from the rooftops about how important early childhood is in Virginia and that those first 5 years matter, and they matter just as much, if not more, than those K-12 years. And the K-12 system, I have older kids now, much older, you know, they have issues and challenges that they're working on, but a lot of the funding, a lot of the focus gets on K-12, and we need that attention and that focus to also be on what's happening with our infants, our toddlers, and our preschoolers. So we really want our ratings, and we're calling them profiles, to add in more than just the rating. We'll have some resources for families on it to, again, partly just help recognize and help families understand how important those infant toddler preschool years are. It's not just looking for somebody to babysit your child, but it's somebody who can really be emotionally supportive and help your child start to learn. So I think that that's one piece, is that hopefully we'll just help families better understand what quality looks like, and that it's building on health and safety standards, not replacing it, but it's building on those as well. When it comes to explaining class, I think that part's really fascinating too, because we do probably get more questions like, what's the curriculum and does it matter what curriculum my child's program's using? So I think it's also an opportunity to help parents understand that sometimes it's just that emotional feel you have when you walk into a classroom. I know I used to feel that when I had to drop my own little 18-month-old off at a childcare center. And there were places where I didn't feel like he was going to be emotionally supported. And that was hard. And then there were other classrooms I'd take him in, and the teacher was so loving and energetic. And I want families to know that that's an important skill, and that that's partly what we're helping them look for, because families don't have a chance to sit there and watch the teachers for an hour, you know, and gather information. And then I think too, helping them understand that we're not just watching for teachers that smile and love your kids. We're also watching for teachers who know how to engage that early brain development, and that you can trust that these scores are capturing these really important interactions. So, you know, we are still playing around with how to explain that to families. So, you know, if you all want to help us with that, that would be great. I just want families to understand that kind of emotional responsiveness that's important, and then what's happening to support your child's early brain development. And that's really what our system is intended to do.
I love that. You know, we have this webinar, like it's like an hour, it's called Meaningful Interactions at Home, and it really ties
with it. I have. I think we've pulled one of the handouts too that we're going to reference in some of our materials for families. Yeah.
Okay. It's been really wonderful to connect those ideas, you know, for families, right? Like this class, this is what interactions look like. This is what you are doing at home, which is what we're also doing here, you know, with your children. I mean, how to get more of those things in and how it impacts children and their growth and development. So really wonderful little webinar that, parents have really seemed to.
That would be ideal, wouldn't it? So like, you know, sometimes I think of families when I was teaching kindergarten that would tell me, you know, they'd do flashcards with their kids, you know, and again, that's fine a little bit, but I would love for, as families start to learn more about class, to think, oh, maybe I need to ask more how and why questions, or maybe I need to introduce bigger words to them and kind of point things out. So, you know, if we can, by partly influencing what's happening in the classrooms, then also help families understand what they can do at home to build on that, that would just, you know, be ideal.
Right. And it's, you know, it also emphasizes that it's not an extra thing, just like we tell the educators, right? Like, I'm not adding another thing. It's, you know, how to make the most of your time if you're cooking in the kitchen or you're driving to the grocery store, right? Like, so it doesn't have to be this whole set amount of time.
Yeah, that you don't have to buy a fancy toy that makes a bunch of noise. You can just walk and talk and point things out, like in your yard. And yeah.
You know, this is what serve and return looks like with infants, you know, all of those things. So yeah, wonderful resource, you know, for anybody who is listening.
Awesome.
What do you wish state or organizational level, like systems, would know about class when getting started? Like, what do you wish you would have known from the beginning of your implementation that you think would be important for them to know?
That is a great question. The first thing that pops into my mind is we were really nervous back when we first started this to ever share raw scores with programs. We just felt like programs weren't going to understand why they got a 2 or a 3 or a 6. And so we talked about ranges and we gave descriptions, but we didn't share the actual scores with programs in our first two versions of our voluntary quality system. And that was a shift when our new leadership came to Virginia, and they were like, not only do we want you to share scores, we want you to share scores a lot. We want to put those numbers and that data in the hands of program leaders. We want teachers to understand it. And sometimes, you know, folks don't understand why they don't get all 7s, and everybody kind of naturally wants all 7s, but that's part of the learning process, is by giving people and empowering them to have their own data and to understand how to use it, and that you know, comparing that to average scores in our state, what all that means. So really, I think just, you know, anybody who's nervous about sharing those, that data with folks, just lean into it. You know, it may not go perfectly initially, but having those conversations about the numbers, about the data and what they mean, I think is where you start to see real understanding about how to then use those scores. The second piece I would just add is that if you're going to do that, you need to follow up with frequent observations so that teachers and site leaders can see the growth. So if we only did observations once a year, even if they got their scores, they're not going to see growth for even a whole another year. And so by us doing it in the fall and spring, it gives them really measurable growth and they can actually see that like teacher sensitivity improved by a point from the fall to the spring. And that's really impactful that we celebrate that growth with teachers and kind of highlight where that happened.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't know how many conversations that I've had, you know, to explain to people any move forward is celebratory, right? We're not just looking at whole numbers, right?
Right.
Every increment that moves forward is a positive, like a positive.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we're trying to think about that with our first year, you know, we'll publish our ratings, but in future years, we also want to recognize sites that improved by a certain amount so that it's not just saying that we'll recognize these top performing sites, but how, if you've improved a certain increment, how do we recognize and celebrate that as well? So
that's a lot of work, right? Mm-hmm. Like moving those numbers, right? Takes, you know, levels of consistency across the day and things, right? Like, so yeah, definitely needs some celebration. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you guys recognize that and that's going to be happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Love that. Earlier you mentioned when they're at, I'm just piggybacking on what you just said, when they're at a 3.99 or below, there's coaching that happens that's optional, you know, depending on if their site's on a needs support.
Needs support, yeah.
Or not. And then at a 4.0 or higher, you have these PD, right? Supports, webinars, things like that. Can you lay out what some of those things look like? You know, because as people listen to this, they're really trying to wrap their head around, you know, what this looks like and what kind of things they could do. To support their programs, yeah, what some of those professional development opportunities are and what those coaching cycles might look like.
Yeah. So besides the coaching, some of the most common things that folks use, and again, these are typically facilitated by either local leaders, school division leaders, or possibly our Ready Region staff, or some of our improvement partners that do a variety of types of PD, but like peer learning communities. So if there are, you know, groups of either family child care providers that want to come together and talk about maybe a certain domain of class that they want to all work on together, they can come together and kind of talk and share ideas with each other. And, you know, or maybe it's instructional support. That's an area that a lot of pre-K classrooms want to focus on. And so by bringing them together to kind of maybe listen to a podcast or read an article and then come together and talk about that and share ideas. So we're really encouraging a lot of peer learning when those scores are more on that higher end to kind of celebrate what's working. We are trying to capture more video examples and have more exemplars that really focus down to those dimension and domain levels. I think probably like everybody, we're trying to get a more diverse selection of videos so that folks see themselves in those videos. So more video examples in family child care homes and in dual language settings so that, again, there's just great examples out there for folks to see as well.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for adding that.
Sure. Did you want me to talk more about the coaching? Sorry. I wasn't sure.
I mean, I want all the things, whatever you want to give us.
Okay. Sure. So then with coaching, it depends. We have some different coaching partners and they can establish their own coaching models, but they come together and talk and share as well. We do require that all of them have some practice-based coaching training and kind of implement some of those strategies in their coaching approach. Some do virtual coaching, some do in-person coaching, some do a hybrid approach of coaching. Some meet 4 sessions and then kind of review results, and it may just be 4 sessions of coaching, and some coach all year long. So we really are trying to kind of have our coaches kind of look at the data, develop coaching plans based on what those scores are saying and where they need to improve, and then check in on those scores to see how progress is being made to determine additional scores. additional coaching.
Yeah. You know, for the sake of data collection, is there a time in which you surveyed the educators to see how this implementation, right, and this rollout, you know, the services, things like that are working for them?
Yeah. So we actually have a partnership too with our University of Virginia partners, our evaluation team, and partly through our work with our preschool development grant, we did annual workforce surveys. And in those workforce surveys, there are some questions specific to class training, whether they got like introductory training, did they participate in coaching, did they participate in other types of training? And if so, what was, you know, their feelings about whether that was enough or sufficient, you know, overall. We also ask some questions just in general about curriculum supports, and then supports for kind of PD in general, and sort of how is the field feeling. We take those results and we kind of look for trends. Our regions get those back so they can kind of see their regional results to these workforce surveys. We look at trends by like family childcare versus public school versus Head Start programs to see if we can kind of identify some unique needs. So, you know, right now, I think we are really trying to focus in on our family childcare needs and trying to sort of help them understand how to use class in mixed stage settings and supporting them in kind of a more personal touch, just knowing that, again, having someone in your home who's observing you is a little different than having like your own site leader observe you. And so trying to find more resources and supports for family childcare is one of the things we've kind of taken from some of our workforce surveys and feedback from the field.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, when you have such a mixed age group, it's a challenge for the observer as well, if they're not super seasoned, right? Like how, what does this look like? So you kind of have to have a protocol for that, you know, and what those observations are going to look like specifically because of that space, almost similar to like early Head Start, right? Because early Head Start also has that mixture of ages in it. So I love that you're paying attention to that and really supporting that, because in supporting that, again, you're supporting the educator and the space because, you know, you're able to see all the things. And it is, again, a true, accurate depiction of what's happening in that learning setting.
The other things that we're just, you know, in some ways it feels like even though we've been practicing and getting these observations done, we're really now at the point where we finally have data on 100% of our publicly funded classrooms since this was our first required year. So in a lot of ways, we are still really looking at the data to tell us what else is needed, like where are we seeing needs and trends? And so that's actually something we're really excited this summer to kind of do a lot more analysis and kind of break down the data, compare it to how classrooms that are using curriculum are not, and what are we seeing in those trends to help inform kind of future ideas for our improvement supports as well. So really excited to kind of take this data into the next level, and let's come back at a year from now and we'll probably have a whole list of some more different types of improvement supports that we want to provide and help support the field with.
Do I hear that you want to come back in a year so we can do some? That's what I heard when you just said that.
I think that's what I said. Yep.
Yes. I would love it. Earlier I asked, you know, I mentioned that it was summer, right? And so as an educator, it used to be my favorite time of year, right? Because a school year is a long year, you know?
Yeah.
Still very short. People think it's like so big and it's really not, right? You only really have like a month, you know, because then you go back into planning and preparing for like your next year or whatever.
Yeah.
You have any big plans for this summer?
Well, now that I'm not a classroom teacher, we don't get a summer break. So we actually, the department, in a lot of ways, our work starts in the summer because we now have to take those actually close to 30,000 observations by the time we have the fall, the spring, and the external. And we have to get these ratings calculated and go through a data verification process and launch our new public quality profiles for the fall. So a lot of my summer will actually be doing that. I do have a couple different conferences and events that I'm looking forward to getting out and about in our state, and even a national conference to talk to more folks, hear from them about their experiences, and really promote these quality profiles. And then my are a little older, so they 16 and 21. So they're at that stage where their work schedule kind of interferes with us taking nice long vacations, but we're going to squeeze in some time here in Virginia. My father is retired at Lake here in Virginia, so we try to get there as much as possible too. And I have a sweet little dog that I like to take with me. She's my buddy as my boys now are older. So want to get out with her and just kind of relax and enjoy the summer where I can.
What kind of dog is she?
She is a beagle pointer mix. Her name is Misty. So brown and white. If anybody's familiar with the book, Misty of Chincoteague, the old storybook, she's the color of the horse Misty from Chincoteague. So that is where she got her name.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you have a great summer planned. And even though you have like 30,000, like I'm sweating. That's a lot. 30,000, you know, observations to, you know, go through and aggregate data for. You were smiling when that happened. Like you can tell that you just love this work and serving the people you serve. So thank you so much for that work and being that your community.
Well, it's part of a huge team. So shout out to all our ready regions, my VQB5 team here and our data team at DOE. Like it's amazing how much our own teams are growing, but it's super exciting. And we're all like really excited to have this data and to be able to use it.
I'm here for it. And I cannot wait to circle back.
Okay. Sounds good.
Any final thoughts, Chris?
No, it just, you know, again, it all kind of comes down to those interactions. And so, you know, again, I'll go back to maybe that first 20 minutes in the classroom and how, you know, it wasn't, again, the children that necessarily came in knowing their alphabet or not, but it was the children who you could tell came from emotionally supportive backgrounds and were able to kind of get along with their peers and were ready to kind of talk and learn and engage. And I want all children to have that when they walk in. And so, you know, I just feel like this work it's going to impact the field. And so if anything, maybe before I retire, I'll go back and be a kindergarten teacher again and kind of watch the changes that hopefully will happen.
Oh, I don't even know if I need to say anything else. We could just end here. No. Thank you so much for coming. I'm going to take you up on us getting together again.
Wonderful.
Enjoyed spending time. Thank you for making time. I know you're busy. Everyone, give applause for Chris Myers. Yes.
Well, it was wonderful being here. And I love talking about this. So thanks for inviting me.
No worries. Anytime. Like, and I'm not joking. You're going to get so sick of seeing me. you can find today's episode and transcript on our website, teachstone.com/podcasts. Do you enjoy our conversations? Let us know by dropping us a like or a comment on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you are listening from. You can also send us an email at podcast@teachstone.com if you want to be a guest, have an idea for an episode, or you just want to connect with us. Remember, behind great leading and teaching are powerful interactions. Let's build that culture together.
Thank you to today's team. Marnetta Larimer is our host. Our producers are Isabella Henriksen and me, Megan Cornwell. Editing help is from Castos. You can find Impacting the Classroom on our website at teachstone.com/podcasts, where you can also listen to our other show, Teaching with Class. Impacting the Classroom is a Teachstone production.